Deco Society welcomes you to our Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future Deco Society and other related events, also book reviews, handy household hints, and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era. Deco Retro. Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Nancy on the Deco Retro program. Colin McCann is widely recognised as New Zealand's foremost painter. Over 45 years, his work encompasses many themes, subjects and styles, from landscape to figuration to abstraction and an innovative use of painted text. His adaptation of aspects of modernist painting to a specific local situation and his intense engagement with spiritual matters mark him out as a distinctive figure in 20th century art. Colin John McCann was born in Timaru on the 1st of August 1990. He showed an early interest in art, which was stimulated by the work of his maternal grandfather, photographer and painter William Ferrier, as well as regular visits to exhibitions. As a teenager, McCann attended Russell Clark's Saturday art classes before enrolling at the Dunedin School of Art, 1937-39, where Robert N. Field proved an inspirational teacher. He first exhibited his works at the Otago Art Society in 1939. In 1942, McCann married fellow artist Anne Hamlett. The couple went on to have four children. At the beginning of World War II, McCann worked in prescribed industries in support of the war effort. Later, he travelled around the South Island, getting seasonal work, leaving his family at home. His work from time to time reflects the places he went to, particularly the Nelson region. McCann's first mature works, religious paintings and symbolic landscape, such as the Angel of the Annunciation, Takaka, Night and Day and the Promised Land, emerged in the years immediately after the war. Thanks to the generosity of Charles Brash, the Dunedin-based poet and founding editor of the literary journal Landfall, McCann was able to visit Melbourne from July to August in 1951 to study paintings in the National Gallery of Victoria. In May 1953, the family moved to Auckland, where McCann began work at the Auckland City Art Gallery, and they bought a house in Titirangi. In April 1956, he became keeper and deputy director of the gallery. McCann assisted in the professionalisation of the gallery and the first exhibition and publications to record a New Zealand art history. Between April and July 1958, McCann and his wife visited the United States on gallery business, but also used the opportunity to see art that interested him. Paintings such as The Wake and the Northland panels reflect McCann's immediate response to this visit, and his stylistic development accelerated over the following decade. In 1960, the family moved to a house in central Auckland, and in August 1964, McCann resigned from the Auckland City Art Gallery to take up a position as a lecturer in painting at the University of Auckland's Earlham School of Fine Arts. He taught there for 6 years, influencing a generation of artists. During the 1960s, McCann was increasingly successful in having his work shown and recognised both in New Zealand and internationally. In January 1971, he left Earlham to paint full-time. The 1970s were rich, productive years for McCann, with numerous exhibitions. A second retrospective of his work was presented at Auckland City Art Gallery in 1972. The first, a joint exhibition with Toss Woolliston, was held in 1963. However, by the late 1970s, McCann's health was deteriorating, and by the mid-1980s, he was suffering badly in health. In 1984, the exhibition I Will Need Words was presented as part of the Biennial of Sydney, but McCann was barely able to appreciate his growing international reputation. He died in Auckland Hospital on the 27th of May, 1987. Auckland City Art Gallery presented another retrospective the following year, Colin McCann, Gates and Journeys, further major exhibitions both in New Zealand and overseas have followed. This afternoon we are lucky enough to have in the studio Victoria McCann, the daughter of Colin McCann. Good afternoon, Vicky. Can I call you that or Victoria?
That's fine.
Yes, and lovely to have you with us today. Now, Vicky, you were born in Mapua in the South Island. Have you any recollections of this period?
No, not at all. I was too young when the family left Mapua.
Yes, you would only been a baby, so yes. Now, where do you fit in the family? Are you the youngest, the middle, or what? And how many other siblings did you have?
I'm the third, the second to youngest. There was my brother William, my sister Catherine, and myself, and then my younger brother Matthew.
Yes. And you're all fairly close together, or...?
No, we're spread out. It sort of looks like every 2 years, but it's a little bit different to that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. So you'd all be very good friends when you were growing up. Oh, well, I won't talk about brothers and sisters,
yeah. Maybe.
Now, after you moved from Mapua, you went to stay with your mother's family because of financial reasons. Can you remember this happening?
I don't really remember that happening. My first memories of Dunedin, of living in Dunedin, were with my father's parents, actually.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I think we went to both homes for various reasons, or to give the parents respite, I suppose.
Yes.
The grandparents respite.
Yes. Oh, that was nice. They were very supportive grandparents, weren't they, on both sides, which was lovely for you children.
They were supportive of my mother and us children, yes.
Which was lovely. Now, you're the grandfather on your mother's side, Archbishop...
No, Deacon.
Oh, Archdeacon, sorry.
It's a bit different.
Yes, it is. Sorry about that. W.A. Hamblett, what were your impressions of him? Because he would have been quite a sort of figure in your life, I imagine.
Well, Archdeacon Hamblett was a person who wore very strange clothing, and he was all in black. He had a broad-brimmed bowler hat with a black cockade on it. He had buttons up his legs.
Oh, my gosh.
He had something called he wore a sort of frock coat thing.
Yes.
And he looked quite sort of forbidding to me.
I can imagine with all that regalia on. Yes.
He wasn't a cuddly grandpa.
No.
No.
But anyway, he impressed you all, I'm sure. How was the relationship with your sort of father and the family at that stage? Your father wasn't staying with you, was he? He was obliged to, you know, find work elsewhere, and you probably saw him fairly infrequently, is that right?
Yes, the only time I remember seeing him in that period was actually when we were staying with his parents.
Oh, okay.
And he came knocking on the door. And that was a huge, that's like my first memory. It was big an event for me. I jumped out of the bath and ran down the hall because I could hear his voice.
Yeah, waiting to see
and
him.
And I wasn't allowed to see him.
Oh, gosh.
Absolutely not.
Oh, how terrible for you.
It was awful. And my brother explained it to me because he said, well, Dad wasn't allowed to see Mum or us. Until he had a certain amount of money, £80 he had to have.
To put
a deposit down and get a house and get us established somewhere.
Which is quite a lot of money for those days because he was just getting seasonal work, wasn't he? Do you think your father was angry at this time that the Art Society did not accept his talent and that was a reason for the family's financial problems?
Well, I don't know that it would have been a reason for the financial problems of the family. I think that his overwhelming desire to paint, to express himself through art, was the thing that... it's extremely expensive.
Oh, right.
Very
okay.
expensive to be an artist.
Right, I mean, buying all the materials and all that. Mm. And then, you know, with no other source of income.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I know my mother was just a miracle of at making ends meet.
She was
a wonderful cook and she could manage to rustle up a meal out of virtually nothing sometimes, yes.
But she would have had to have done on many occasions with four young mouths to feed, yes.
Yes, well, I remember the aforementioned Charles Brash, when he was visiting us one day, saying to me that my mother could make a meal for all the visitors the family out of a lettuce leaf and an egg. Well, I don't think that's quite true, but yeah.
Yes, it just showed, you know, how she managed the whole financial thing. Eventually your father, well, you did go to Christchurch when he sort of, and they got a house there, and you said it was a very small place by the railway tracks, is that right?
That's right, on Barber Street.
But at least you were all back together, weren't you, as a family?
Oh, yes.
Yes, which was nice. And eventually he was offered a job in Auckland at the gallery, and you moved together as a family and obtained a house in Titirangi.
Well, we moved together out of the Barber Street place, and it was dreadful for us because we left all our books and toys behind.
That
wasn't very important. Everything else went, but not those. Mm. And, of course, we were a bit bereft. And we didn't go straight up there because there was nowhere for us to live in Auckland.
So
we went to my aunt's place. And she and her family accepted mum and four children. It must have been quite a burden on them.
Yes.
And we stayed with them until we were sent for.
Mm.
Dad had found that little house in French Bay.
Yes, well, it wouldn't be easy, you know, for him to come up here and sort of, sort out the job and then find somewhere to live. But eventually he purchased the house in Titirangi, so you were, that was nice, wasn't it?
Well, it was, actually. I quite liked it. It was a bit different. There were no monkeys. I had been told that there would be monkeys.
Oh! That's probably to lure you up here.
Yes, so I saw the uncurling fronds of the punga trees and thought they might be the monkeys' tails, but
no such luck.
They weren't.
Yeah.
So it was strange because that house, which seems so tiny, actually seemed really big to me compared to the Barber Street house.
Yes.
So that was probably a little railway's house, one of those tiny ones that fit in your living room.
Yes. Mm. And you, as children, you sort of slept downstairs in almost a open sort of type of situation?
Well, in the first instance, we slept sort of inside that little house at the end by the windows.
Yeah, unfortunately, I never got to visit it.
You haven't seen it.
I intend to.
So we were all sort of squashed in there somehow, and while Dad organised bunks under the floor.
Oh, wow.
And we had to go down the trapdoor.
Oh, really?
We had my sister and myself on one side and my brother William and Matthew on the other.
Right.
And the ladder in the middle. Right. and we slept there for quite a while, actually, for quite a long time, before we were all sent off with my mother's brother, who drove us all on a grand tour back down to the South Island.
And oh, really?
That's okay. Where my father and John Castleberg, his friend, the poet John Castleberg, were able to extend the deck and build the new bunk rooms underneath.
Yes.
And then where we had been became the bathroom, shower, wash house, whatever.
Right. Mm. Luxury.
Oh, yes. Well, it was because our bath had been sort of up next to the kitchen.
Yes.
Right by the dining table, so to speak.
Mm. Mm. Oh,
well, it's not so odd. There was another place I used to go and visit and was very surprised to see someone sit up, a half-naked peering lady, peering over the rim of what I'd always thought was a sort of funny cupboard, but it was actually the bath.
Oh, okay.
There were all sorts of arrangements and tittering in those days.
Yes. And there were lots of get-togethers, I've been told, at the house with... by that time, your father was becoming well-known, and Auckland society, I think, wanted to know him, and there were lots of get-togethers at the house and with quite reasonably famous people and... all that. Do you remember
people
that?
People who became famous, I guess.
Yes.
Because, yes, I do remember these sorts of things, but you have to realise that Titirangi was a very strated society at that time, and up on top with all the views,
yes,
are the wealthy, and down the bottom near the beach, lucky for us, we're the poor people.
Yes.
And the bachelors.
Well, it was quite nice to be on the beach anyway.
Yes. So, but it was, society wasn't keen on Colin McCann. But he had a lot of people who really admired what he did, and he had all these amazing people who went to the summer schools and went to his art classes.
Great.
And other people who were involved in art who did like what he was doing and liked his perspectives on you know, when he curated shows and things like this.
Mm.
But Peter Webb was working at the gallery with him at that time.
Yes.
And then later on they started Peter Webb went on into the business of buying and selling arts and objects.
Yes, which he did very well, didn't he? Well, his gallery's still there, isn't it?
But all these people, there are a lot of famous names. And we used to have visitors like... Toss Woolaston would turn up.
Oh, wow.
He'd be off on his... He was always wandering around New Zealand because he was a Raleigh's man selling Raleigh's products.
Yeah, he was finding it hard to make ends meet too in those days.
And I remember when Rita Angus was there.
Really?
Yes. And she and Mum had been out walking and I came home from school and there was a piece of clematis.
Yes.
That had been picked. I think she was on her way up to North. And so that she was drawing it. So I got invited to sit down and draw it with her, which I did.
Oh, wow. Because she was, your mum was friends with her at the art school in Dunedin, wasn't she?
Certainly she knew her and was friends with her, yes.
Now, well, let's move on to your mother, Anne Hamblett. She was a noted artist in her own right, wasn't she? She was really good.
At that time, yes.
And she had known Doris Luss at the art school in Dunedin.
Yes.
Can you tell me about her type of painting, sort of compared to your father's? You know, they didn't do they weren't alike in painting, were they, in their art?
No, my mother was a very good landscape artist. She also painted flowers and things, and there's a lovely little portrait of her brother Matthew, who she managed to paint because he was sick with the flu.
Okay, yes.
He couldn't do anything to get away.
Yes.
Yes, but she had a way of making things, her pictures stand out because they're subtle and they change from the way you look at them, the way she lays her paint on. It can make the frost crackle, it makes the curtain flutter, yes. The flower,
exactly,
you know, shimmer. It's something that she could do using her skills as an artist.
She wasn't really modernistic, and was she in her...
Well, she's got one painting with a floating jug in it. But
okay.
But well, mostly, no, everything just, is fairly, yes. What you see is what you get. But it's sort of enhanced by her work.
Mm. You know? And she did quite a lot of illustrations for children's books too, and this sort of helped the family finances, didn't it?
Yes.
I think your father was involved in that too, wasn't he?
He was at times. We're talking about school journals here that, yes, and people could make a few shillings doing some drawings for a story or a poem or whatever. But the first books she actually illustrated were, the names of the people, the authors, escape me. Elaine, oh, God. Anyway, the one of them... that there was a little book about going to the beach with a family, going to the beach and all the things they took with them,
yes.
And then the change in the weather, and they all had, the ham sandwiches and things. That,
oh, okay. Typical thing to take to the beach.
All wrap their towels and rush back to sit in the bus shelter shed,
yes.
And, you know, because it rained. And the other one was the wonderful book about the three bears and the manpower man.
Oh, okay.
And you see, that reflected the times. The manpower man was the person who sent daddies off on job somewhere.
Oh, okay.
sent them up to Nelson, you know, things like that.
And there was a wonderful exhibition at Te Uru in Titirangi. That was just her paintings, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't just her paintings. The actual concept of it was her creative life. And so we looked at all these things, her art and the journals and the little book she'd made or had published, that she'd illustrated. And we looked at her pottery because later on,
She did pottery as well.
Well, later, much later, because she hadn't touched the painting for years and years and years.
Yes.
And then she finally had some superannuation and some money of her own. So she did buy a case of paints, and she thought she would try painting. And unfortunately, she just couldn't... didn't have the control that she needed to paint in the way she had been before. So it was, rather than find a new way of painting, she was disappointed and she put that aside.
Oh, what a shame.
But she went up to Outreach, which was the old Newton police station, and she took pottery classes there.
Oh, really? Gosh,
and
great.
So that was, she went into a great period of experimentation. It was really, really interesting to see how she worked with that.
After all that big spell she had sort of bringing up children and whatnot, that was fantastic.
So the pottery was great, and then unfortunately she broke her wrist.
Oh.
And that was the end. And she refused my help. I said, I'll come and do the clay for you.
What a shame, because kneading clay is quite a job.
She just couldn't have managed it. But she did hand-built pottery, and her largest one was for growing watercress in. So she'd made this great big container
For that.
Lovely. As big as she could have to fit in the kiln. It had sags and bags and it was amazing. It was all done with coils. And eventually it turned into an outdoor seat. And that is still being used. I won't say where, but it is.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that's an amazing piece of pottery.
Well, listen, Vicky, we've just about come to the end, and I think our listeners would have enjoyed listening to you today. It's been really good. And thank you very much for coming in and being our guest for today.
Thank you for your welcome.
Now, listeners, this is our last program before Christmas. And Philippa and I, she's in the studio with me today. We've chosen a couple of Christmas songs. Mine is Pohutukawa Tree by Love to Sing, and I would like to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and thank you for listening to us this year. Now I'll hand over to Philippa.
And the song that I would like to play is Po Marie, Silent Night, sung in both Maori and English by the Musica Sacra Choir. With the conductor, Indra Hughes. But before that, I'd like to wish all you listeners a very enjoyable Christmas with lots of good cheer, relaxing with family and friends, and all the best for the year ahead.
Today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/deco-retro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society, Auckland, we will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Modern. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.